My guest today has a career on stage, film and TV that has elevated him to his current status as Australia's most versatile leading man. Add to this a musical career and you have a very deserving, talented artist and a real beaut bloke. Welcome to the show, John Waters.
Thank you, Jenny. It's nice to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for your time. And you're bringing your show, Radio Luxembourg, is coming to our Shoalhaven Entertainment Centre on Saturday, the 24th of January. Could you please explain the Radio Luxembourg for those that may not know what that is?
No, well, Radio Luxembourg, it's really, I've used it as a suitable title for what is basically a concert of the best British rock music of the 1960s with myself and my band. And the reason is that people who lived in England at that time would know that the BBC didn't have any, didn't really play the rock and pop music that we as young people wanted to hear. They considered it was beneath their brief, and there were no commercial radio licenses in the UK, none at all. So the record companies had to publicise their wares, of course, and the biggest explosion of youth spending there had ever been. And they broadcast from the Duchy of Luxembourg on the mainland of continental Europe. Mm-hmm. And they had a medium wave, quite a powerful transmitter there that sent the show across the North Sea to England and all the young kids there. And that's how we all learned about rock and roll and became, you know, creators of our own form of it and started this great dialogue with the United States with music going back and forth. And it's really mostly thanks to Radio Luxembourg that we were familiar with all the music at all.
What a brilliant idea for the British record industry to do that.
Yes, it was. You know, they took advantage of a loophole, you know, and later on, most people seem to have heard of the boats, pirate radio boats. They came later on in the 70s and they broadcast from a little bit closer to just outside the 12-mile limit, so they were still avoiding the laws of the land. Radio Luxembourg was just in the, you know, slightly more old-fashioned days, and the medium wave, it reached us, but it sometimes was subject to a bit of fluctuations in the weather over the North Sea, and it was sort of faded up and down and in and out just at the moment of our favourite part of the song. But when the weather was good and the signal was clear, it was great. And I've spoken to other people here who, you know, expat Brits who said, oh yeah, well, from the time I was 13 I was hiding under my bedclothes with my transistor radio so my parents wouldn't know that I was listening to rock and roll music.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of early day Wi-Fi, isn't it, when you had to lean out the windows to get the reception.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, but, you know, good memories. And, of course, the memories are always locked in with the great music that was coming out at that time. And new, young British groups, as we call them, as opposed to bands. And, of course, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were the two leading bands of that period. But there were a lot of other great ones. And so I picked the eyes out of my favourites, really, to do and to talk to the audience a little bit about those days and what my youth experience was like listening to this music on Radio Luxembourg. And that's the sort of glue that puts these songs together for the audience. And it's been a delight and a joy by our audiences, mainly the kind of boomer type of audience. Well, they've brought along younger generations as well, because this is classic FM radio music. It's still played to this day. Yeah, the great thing is that we do it live with a really fantastic band, and this is just not an ordinary cover band. This is, you know, some of Sydney's top musicians, and it's such fun to hear this music played live. You know, to do Thunderclap Newman's Something in the Air, I don't think anybody else does that live, but we do. And the Kinks and the Small Faces and Steve Winwood, it's all great stuff. People try to put us down, just cause we get around. Things they do look awful cold. Hope I died before I get old. My generation, my generation. Why don't y'all fade away? Don't try to dig what we all say. I'm not trying to call a big sensation. Just talking about my generation. My generation.
don't you all fade away. Don't try to dig what we all say. I'm not trying to call a big sensation. I'm just talking about my generation. Get around. The things they do look awful cold. Hope I die before I get old.
As you said, you touched on, you don't see it live much anymore. You hear it on the radio. So in this show, do you yourself, I know you have tremendous dialogue, do you actually play the guitar at all in this one?
No, in this band, I'm just the lead singer. Okay. I normally play with the band, with all the concerts that we do. But I've got Paul Burton on lead guitar, and Joe Elms is a beautiful singer who adds a female voice to our sound and also plays acoustic guitar. I just like the fact that what I do is I'm a front man of a band, and I have the freedom with the radio mic to wander around and not be tied to the guitar, and just be like the kind of front man of the band that was common around that era of the 60s, and I'm really enjoying it. And it also frees me up a lot to, while I'm singing the songs, I'm able to really contact the audience in a nice way, and I feel like I'm getting closer to them.
Yeah. The band called the Chartbusters, as you said, and of course...
A name that we just gave them for this show, but it's a good name.
What a great name, yeah.
That's what we're playing, Chartbusters, yeah.
Absolutely, and the man who is a talent in himself is your mate Stuart Dearetta. Is that how you say it?
Darietta. Yeah,
Darietta. Yeah. As you read it, Darietta.
Yes, that's right. He's a unique talent, really. He's a great keyboard player, and he's a big personality. And so we're able to sort of bounce off each other and have a bit of banter between songs. And he does a couple of lead vocals himself. Yeah, it's nice for me. I take over and I introduce him to do lead vocal on a couple of songs, and I take over the backing vocals along with Joe. And then Joe's got a couple of nice solos as well. She sings To Sir With Love, which is such a beautiful song. And again, lovely to perform it live.
Yeah.
It really is a good band of, these people have played with all the greats of the era. You know, Paul Burton was Rene Gaier's lead guitarist for a long time, and he's played with just about everyone. You know, Barnsey, and currently with Leo Sayer's band. Greg Henson from John English's band. Tony Mitchell from Sherbet. Either him or we have Victor Rounds on bass, who was in Marsha Hines's band. And so, you know, these guys have been around a while, know this music and love it. And I think the joy that we have in playing it conveys itself to the audience.
Absolutely. And you just touched on it earlier about the music coming out from this Radio Luxembourg. Started off as this American wave that came through. Do you think that there were kind of two eras in the 60s, your pre and post Beatles?
Yes, definitely. The Beatles marked a change, and for us it was a change of much more homegrown music. We had our own rock and roll artists and just like solo performers. Before them we had Cliff Richard, and we had Billy Fury, and Marty Wilde, and these were the, you know, 1959 through to 1962 type of singers. Some of them were really great. We had Helen Shapiro, who's one of my favorite pop artists of the time. But it was very much a mimicking of an American form of music. And then when the Stones and the Beatles came along, they wrote their own material, and the music took on this slightly different flavor. The musicians who learned their trade listening to the American music, and a lot of the time it was on Radio Luxembourg or through imported records, they started playing great guitar, like it was blues based, but it was pop and rock music. And it was with the Jim Marshall invented an amplifier that the knockdown sucks off, and you could have play with distorted sounds. And the Americans loved what the British did, you know, and they started doing it themselves, and it began this kind of transatlantic musical dialogue, which was a beautiful thing to see.
Oh, absolutely, and we're forever grateful.
Dirty old river, must you keep rolling, rolling into the night? People so busy, make me feel dizzy. Taxi light shines so bright.
The music of our youth seems to be what sticks with us in our generation. I'm not sure as generations go on. So just a little bit about your early music experiences and a little bit about you yourself. You're born in a musical family with brothers and sisters, mum and an acting dad?
Yeah, well, my father was an actor, so I was born into an entertainment industry family.
Okay.
he was actually quite a good singer, but he didn't ever make a living as a singer, but he was a very good character actor, Scottish character actor from Glasgow, and we were all born and grew up in London. I spent a lot of time in Scotland in my childhood, but I grew up basically in London, went to school there, and I liked all the kind of current music of the 1950s, which was, a lot of it was kind of crooning big band stuff from Frank Sinatra, but when the rock and roll came out in the middle 50s, yeah. I was still quite young, but I remember seeing Bill Haley in the comments on television and thinking, wow, that's a little bit different. And of course, Elvis came out, and we did hear those records, but again, you know, they didn't play him very much on the BBC, but we got to hear about the records, we got to read about him, and we went down to the record stores, and in those days you could sample what the song was like, but they'd put it on a little turntable for you,
yeah.
And you'd listen through some headphones and decide whether or not you wanted to buy it. And they got used to me, because I never had enough money to buy, but I just stood there listening to everything. And instead of getting like really annoyed with me, I think they just indulged me. They thought, oh, this kid loves his music, play him all the songs, yeah.
Yeah, see, there were the mods, the rockers and all that music. But yeah, you mentioned about going to school, and there were, you know, people like the Future Yardbirds there, and yeah. Brian May, and, you know, these people that went on to become quite famous.
Yes, well, there were two of the Yardbirds who went to Hampton Grammar School, as I did, and Brian May. He was two or three years ahead of me at Hampton Grammar. But in fact, you know, in those days we didn't used to mix between years, yeah, as much as they do nowadays. But so I only knew that Brian May was at Hampton Grammar School with me for a good 4 years when I read about it about 5 or 6 years ago. Then I read a biography, and it said, oh, he attended Hampton Grammar School from blah, blah. And I went, oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Of course, you went on to do your own band, and at that time you played bass guitar, correct?
Yes. I wanted to sing. I'd listened to Radio Luxembourg, and this is like very much pre-Beatles era. I listened to all the music. I loved country music that they played. Huh? And I wanted to be able to sing it myself. So I got it eventually, after nagging. It was very expensive. To spend £5 on an acoustic guitar with nylon string acoustic was quite an outlay in those days. And my dad had a fluctuating income, but he must have just done a movie or something, and he bought me a guitar, and I sat with it for a long, long time, and I learned all the chords from a Bert Whedon's 1,000 Chords a Day or something book that we all used to learn the guitar chords from. And I really just wasn't looking to become a guitarist per se, but just a singer who can play the guitar to accompany himself, and it meant that I could go and perform, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started performing in a kind of busking way for friends and so on. I had a couple of performances that my mum dobbed me in to do down at the local church gatherings, and I remember the first song I ever performed in public was an old Jimmy Rogers country song called Kisses Sweeter Than Wine.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
I was 12 years old, and singing a song about falling in love and growing up and getting married and having children. But, you know, it was, I thought, you know, I like doing this. I like performing, instead of just in my bedroom. I like performing for other people to hear.
Yeah. And so when did the Fender Precision bass come in? The one that was stolen?
I was asked to join a band with older guys. They'd been at my school. I think one of them was still there, but the band leader had left and was attending university. But he remained attached to Hampton Grammar School, and he said to me, do you want to be in this band I'm putting together? And because I need a bass player. And I said, well, I don't play bass. He said, oh, it's easy. It's just, you know, bottom four strings of a guitar, and you'll pick it up. So he borrowed one and provided it for me when we first started rehearsing and playing. We mainly did blues songs. And then eventually, on time payment, the Never Never, as we used to call it, I got a Fender Precision bass. We started gigging around locally, got better, and I persuaded the band, even though I was younger, they somehow listened to me. I said, we're doing this 12-bar blues music, which is all very well for the university students and, you know, lovers of John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters, but we should do pop music, you know, because then we can play to all the 14 and 15-year-olds at the dances and do the music that they hear on Radio Luxembourg. And they went, oh, yeah, no, but we're a blues band. But eventually they came around to my way of thinking, and yeah, unfortunately, as you mentioned, my precision bass was stolen from our Volkswagen combi van one time, and I never saw it again. I proceeded to play borrowed basses until I somehow managed to procure another very inexpensive one for myself. And the band I was in was called The Riots. It was not a successful band, mainly because we didn't have a recording contract. We tried, and we tried to attract the interest of record labels, but we stuck with mainly local gigs. We went up and down the country a little bit, but you know, we had to drive ourselves in the freezing cold in a van. But it was fun. It was we managed to pay for our instruments, and we didn't, you know, make a lot of money, but we managed to keep going for a while.
Oh, terrific. Now, this is where my little story comes in with you, John, talking about borrowing Fender Precision basses. When you came to Australia, you were in the original cast of Hair. Now, everybody in this area knows my co-host of 13 years, who has now passed away. He was in Hair for 2 weeks just before Harry Bruce went into it, and after Tully, okay? And you borrowed his Fender Precision bass.
I did.
Yeah, you remember the story?
Yeah, yeah. And so he's been on the radio with you.
He and I worked together for 13 years. He passed away 7 years ago, though. And he instilled
in me. I had heard, Harry Bruce took over after that. Well, see, Keith Glass, another Hair cast member, and myself and Graham Matters had written some music. We wanted to go in and record a few tracks in the studio. So I remember him just saying, yeah, you can have my bass. And we went to the night for the night. Overnight recordings, we got the cheap time in the studio. And we knew the recording engineer, so it was great. Yeah.
You know, John didn't remember that story. You reminded him, and I've never forgotten it. Isn't that amazing?
Well, yeah, I remember. I put the story about. I told it quite often, actually. So you must have heard me telling it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it lives on, the story.